hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ain't gonna be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the wheel line, trying to fight and then causing die to be. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my countryman, you walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be warning. When you run down my countryman, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on whiteresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, it just never seems the craziness of courts and quasi-judicial outfits like human rights commissions, etc. There seems to be no end to the nuttiness. Anyway, here's a tribunal out of British, out of the west of the Prairie Province of Manitoba. Tribunal orders no sex birth certificates. The Manitoba government has been ordered to start offering non-binary sex designations on its birth certificates. Now, if you're not quite up on the sexual nonsense, binary refers to either or. I mean, like male or female. You know, you're born either man or woman, right? Always has been that way. In the make-believe world of sexual identity, not everybody's binary. That is, not everybody's either a male or female. I don't know what would be the alternative. Are you a goose? Okay. A human rights adjudicator has also ordered the province to pay $50,000 to a transgendered individual who wanted the birth certificate, the sex designation on their birth certificate, replaced with an X, and was denied. Who complained? Who is identified as TA? Because of a publication, but isn't this the nutty world of the sexually mixed up, all secrecy. Anyways, this TA filed a complaint with the Manitoba Human Rights Commission after the request was turned down in 2014. So TA, he, she, or it, or whatever, what on the driver's license, I'm sorry, our birth certificate, wants simply to have X. The independent adjudicator heard the case, excuse me, ruled the government position is discriminatory, and there's nothing under the law that would prevent a third designation. Adjudicator Dan Manning also said the seriousness of the province's actions toward the complainant was on the high end. Whoa! Hence the $50,000 reward to this sexually mixed up person. Gender identity is part of our concept of selfhood. Yeah, male, female, right? The Vital Statistics Director's practice to not allow non-binary designations of sex designation and only permit male or female designations was effectively the government refusing to acknowledge TA's agency and personhood. Effectively refusing to acknowledge that TA's is seriously mixed up. Well, I'll tell you what. If I was a foreign country and some nutter came to my country as a tourist, and I looked over that person's, I think they can already do this on passports, male, female, or X, I'd say, you're a nut, get out of here. We're not letting you in. I mean, this may go down in terminally corrupt, politically correct Canada. It won't happen in my country. I think that's, hopefully, there will be places that will do that, that will say, you know, enough's enough. This isn't whining, and it isn't in this case. Rex Murphy's is one of the better columnists for the National Post. He's done a lot of good and pumped out a lot of common sense. And this is all about the growing unity crisis in Canada, and we do have one. And Rex writes, there's been a curious turn in some of the press commentary on what we may call the Alberta situation. Reference to whining and complaining reminds us that other regions have had downturns too. Claims that Albertans themselves have been careless in the management of their main industry, that's the oil and natural gas. Some have actually expressed satisfaction that the province may now be forced by its current dilemma to seek alternative sources for its economy. Along the vaporous trail of the new green economy, whatever that strange beast is supposed to be. Yeah, that, and there has been some very nasty, mean-spirited stuff put out against Alberta, which is suffering. It's now into its fifth year since the oil downturn, the inability to get key pipelines approved and built. It cannot get its oil to market, or to be more accurate, It must get the oil to market at a huge discount because it must be transported usually by train. Some of this is baiting, some of this is ignorance, and all of it, in the light of the tensions that now exist out west, is perilous. This is not the time to wind up people who are already fully wound up. Well, yes, there have been downturns before. Mines have closed, American bases have shut down, and businesses have gone bust. But the Alberta case is not like that. The burdens under which Alberta and our labors are singular, if not unique. The greatest contribution into Alberta's downturn, the flight of much of its capital, and the low morale in the industry generally, has been the continuous and furious assault of the province, its oil industry, and Fort McMurray, that's the heart of the tar sands extraction, in particular, have endured for well over a decade. The globalist international movement of apocalyptic climate change has marked Alberta and its oil sands as its chosen target and symbol. There has never been so concentrated and focused an attack on any industry or project that equals in scale the relentless propagandistic denigration of the Alberta oil sands and the city of Fort McMurray. It will be a real challenge to to simply count the negative talks, conferences, papers, news reports, pseudoscience reviews, environmentalist alarms, protests, lawsuits, op-eds, and latterly sermonettes from Greta that have sought to shame and demonize the oil sands, the workers, and the entire oil and gas industry of Alberta. Whole continents and countries whose oil production is exponentially more massive have been ignored. No demonstrations in front of the great coal plants construction in China. No down with pipelines in Peking or Delhi. A pipeline in Alberta gets world coverage. Oil production in Nigeria will never find the front page of the Toronto Star. Neil Young will yodel his way to Fort McMurray and wail, "This is Hiroshima!" But we will not see him pluck his loose strings in protest in China or India. And, you know, this is so true. Or even in his resident homeland, the United States, now the world's number one producer of oil energy. And in many ways, this is a good thing, as Alberta tries to... the United States tries to sever the dangerous relationship with, the dangerous dependency on oil from highly unstable countries like Venezuela, perhaps a little less so Nigeria, and of course Saudi Arabia. The Suzukis, the Sierra Clubs, the always railing Greenpeacers, the fundraising behemoths of the eco industry, and the swarms of petty NGOs, self-appointed activists, and tribute climate celebrities, Bill Nye, the foolish guy, may stand for them all, have feasted on the portrayal of Alberta energy as world-damaging, nature-offending, and planet-despoiling. That's the image pumped out, and has been relentlessly for over a decade. It was, and in the gang up on a global scale, it was and is a gang up on a global scale. One fragment, one singular project in an entire world industry in a little corner of Alberta has been painted as the villain of planetary disaster. Under the specious umbrella of "we must save the planet" and "global warming is an existential crisis," the energy industry of a single province has endured a vicious, unfair, and fanatic assault. This is but one side of the story. During the time the oil sands were in full play, they brought wealth and employment to Canadians, far from all provinces, where the corrective counterpoint to the Newfoundland fishery collapse buttressed the federal treasury in a time of world recession and brought technological innovation and expertise unheralded in the Canadian experience. This is being written by Rex Murphy. Most of all, the oil sands produced the one essential product without which every other industry in Canada or the world could not function or exist: energy. I have, from the beginning of the war on the oil sands, never understood why a product that everybody uses, every person, every household, business, and industry, and uses gratefully to heat homes, travel, produce goods, and maintain the economy, should draw down such blistering hostility on the one industry which supplies that product. Then, of course, there's the other great difference in the woes of Quebec, and that is the conscious and methodical obstruction of the current federal government to getting Alberta's product to world markets, and that means pipelines. Under the previous Trudeau government, from 2015 to earlier this year, two major pipelines, one that would build on an existing pipeline and take an oil east through Quebec down to New Brunswick to be refined at St. John, and another that would have gone up to Prince Rupert through the Rockies, were both cancelled, nixed. Quebec, which feasts off transfer payments, which are generated primarily by Alberta's oil wealth, militantly opposed a pipeline going across its territory. You can't have, that's, this is a Paul Robbins speaking, you can't really have it both, it's both ways. The key element, Rex Murphy continues, in Alberta's distress, lives in the number one frantically trumpeted and ever so virtuously exhaled policy priority of the Trudeau environmentalist government. Climate change is its very favorite top of mind, most to be bragged about, highest virtue signaling issue. That leads to a contradiction between its national leadership and its international pretensions. Which one will it fight to win a medal for? Climate change or Alberta oil? Let us be plain. This is a government that doesn't like the oil, doesn't like oil and gas. This is a government that cancels, impedes, and regulates into submission every effort to allow the principal industry of a province, namely oil and natural gas, and perhaps arguably the nation, to continue, thrive, and expand. Let's point to the needle to True North. The Trudeau government, the government's obsession with its fantasy of being a global warming champion, is and has been in direct and impassable conflict with the Alberta economy. You can pose as the Galahad of climate change, waltz in Paris and Rio, but only at the cost of damning the Alberta oil and gas industry. The Mandarins of Central Canada and the Parliamentary Caucus of the Liberal government at least see Alberta oil and gas as an impediment to, a blotch on, their passionate desire to be the toast of the eco-saints. Yes, in a world of impossibly overpriced green alternative power. I digress here, but most of the projects that are being funded by the government of Ontario under Green former Premier Dalton McGuinty and under his lesbian successor Kathleen Wynne have been massive drains on the taxpayer and not produced a viable alternative. There is not, at this time, a viable alternative to oil and natural gas. And world demand will go up at least for the next 20 years. It'll actually go up 40%. Far from being a dying industry, oil, the world is insatiable for oil and natural gas, particularly the hugely growing populations and economies of China and India. This is not a dying industry. This is not horseshoe making, about to go out of existence except for a niche market. No, this is what the economy will be. And the idea that Canada will go completely green and we'll all get be on our bicycles? Yeah, right. In a prairie winter? Come on. This is Dreamsville. Or that everything will be heated by solar power? This is not a science fiction novel or science fiction movie. This is the real world. And there is no viable alternative, at least for the next 20 years, to oil and natural gas. It's going to be a growing industry. Canada can either be there or be out of it. And with tremendous economic loss, not only to the province of Alberta, but to Canada as a whole. We are living at a time when significant elements of our elites have been captured by the most bogus science since bleeding was widely believed to be the way to deal with almost every illness. This was me digressing back to Rex Murphy. Where is the stronger fealty to the huddled bureaucrats of the IPCC, that's the International something or other for climate change, or the now idle workers of the oil patch? Who will get the warmer greetings in the PM's office? Greta Thunberg or Jason Kenney, the Premier of Alberta? Where is the declaration of an economic emergency in Alberta, and as opposed to the sanctimonious declaration of a climate emergency in Parliament? And I'll digress a moment. When Parliament foolishly declared a climate emergency. There is no climate emergency. There is some climate change. We had a very dry early spring in Manitoba, and then a very wet summer. Some of the crop is still in the field. We had a very wet spring and floods in parts of eastern Canada, and the Ottawa Valley in particular. These are changes from year to year. This is not a pattern that causes a crisis. There may be, indeed, small local crises, as there was flooding in certain areas. And the prudent thing would be, if it appears that this will, for the near foreseeable future, be a pattern, well then certain local adjustments might be made. For instance, building a dam or building dikes or moving buildings away from bodies of water that frequently overflow their banks. This is not a climate emergency. As in, perhaps the sun won't come up for the next 6 months or something like that. Now, that would be a problem. Rex Murphy continues. For SNC, that's SNC-Lavalin, this big, incredibly politically well-connected Quebec engineering firm that run into a number of legal problems. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Justin Trudeau will dance around the rule of law and risk even his own government. For the billions in capital that have fled Alberta because it's just not functioning anymore. Not much of the oil patch is idle. The companies that have relocated, the tens of thousands of jobs lost, where's his leadership, his voice, his action? Climate change is his Bible. Alberta oil, a footnote. So no, this is not a standard downturn, and Albertans are not whining. They are, after an exhausting decade of downturn, outside attack, a fire in Fort McMurray, and an obstructionist and hostile Ottawa, finally weary, even to anger, that they remain unthanked for their contributions to Canada, sick of seeing their industry maligned and targeted, and reluctantly asking questions that go to the center of what being in the Confederation means. One point should be made. Should there be a separatist movement in Alberta, and one is in its infancy, it differs fundamentally from separatism in Quebec. Quebec is a willing, Quebec is a willing and a desired separation from those who espouse that cause. Those in Alberta who are thinking separatist thoughts and who have separatist feelings are doing so only because they've been driven reluctantly and in sorrow to the thought that separation might be the only way to achieve a fair deal from a careless national government and a blithe indifference from centrist mentalities. And there is a real contempt on the part of some people in what sometimes called the Laurentian corridor, that is Montreal, Toronto, and Ottawa. The elites that live there, there tends to be a real contempt for Alberta as rednecks and so on. And actually, in many ways, that's not even true. The rednecks, but even if they were, well, once again, the thought control police are. I mean, in high voice, hate-linked members stayed in uniform. And this is from the National Post of November 19th. The Department of National Defense has revealed that more than a dozen members of the Canadian Armed Forces linked to hateful actions or groups have been warned, disciplined, or ordered to take counseling, but allowed to remain in uniform. The revelation follows months of questions about the fate of 30 active service members identified in a military intelligence report last year as belonging to a hate group or having otherwise made discriminatory or racist statements. Six more have since been added. Talk about spying on your own people. Oh, what have these soldiers done? They belong to a hate group. Now, I would argue there are no hate groups in Canada, to my knowledge. I'll tell you why. Hate group, to have any meaning other than a group that the accuser hates, would have to have been charged under Section 319 of Canada's notorious hate law. Charged, tried, and then duly convicted. To my knowledge, there is no such group in Canada. So, the allegation that some members of the armed forces are members of hate groups is just plain false. They may be members of nationalist groups, that may be true, okay. Or, and otherwise made discriminatory or racist statements. While the Defense Department previously reported that seven of those members were no longer in the military, it had been unable or unwilling to provide information on the others, sparking concerns that officials were not taking the issue seriously. Well, what's the issue? That some members of the armed forces maybe have strong nationalist views, and may even affiliate with certain groups outside, or have racist or discriminatory statements. There's a lot of bureaucratic baffle-gab back and forth in this article, which I'll skip over. The Defense Department's response did not sit well with Bernie Farber, chair. He's a chair. I thought he was a man, but oh, okay. He's a chair of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. Now, that's an anti-free speech network. Don't forget, anti-hate is anti-white and anti-free speech. Oh, and Bernie Farber, he's been around since Moses was in a basket. He was, he must be pushing 70 if he's not already 70. He was for a long time the CEO of the Canadian Jewish Congress, which went out of existence and morphed into something else. He's had several reincarnations since then, and most recently he's the head of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. And let's be quite clear, that's Anti-Free Speech Network. He's a militant Zionist, longtime opponent of free speech going back four decades. Anyway, Bernie Farber, who has demanded military officials provide more information and ultimately do more to curb right-wing extremism and hate in the ranks. Let's take a big time out, as they say in namby-pamby education circles these days. A big time out. Wait a sec here. Hold on. Bernie Farber of the Canadian Anti-Hate, that's Anti-Free Speech Network, demands that military do more to curb right-wing extremism and hate in the ranks. Right-wing extremism, that is, soldiers with a political point of view. He wants that curbed. And hate in the ranks. Well, hate is, or it would be views he doesn't like. You see what is so insane about this? The military is playing along with this to some extent. You know, they've had investigations and people have been sent for counseling and disciplined and all that. What the heck are you fighting for? Why would you join the military of this country at this time and be subjected to this abuse of your right to free speech and to think and to political opinions? And what the hell would you be fighting for? To go and sort out what one band of drug pushers from another band of drug pushers in far-off Afghanistan? Frankly, who cares? Just as long as we don't allow them into this country. Well, what would you be fighting for? Now, I'd have a different opinion if Canada was being invaded, or was potentially, there's a potential of us being invaded. Yes. And I'm not saying that day might not come. I see growing conflicts with communist China. But at this time, why would a virile young man with nationalistic views want to subject himself to this sort of bureaucratic censorship? I find it outrageous. What the hell would you be fighting for? Hey, if the proponents of the New World Order and globalism want to fight, maybe they can put their scrawny backsides on the line. Okay, what else does Bernie want? Quote, some of the hate groups to which these soldiers were affiliated were violent, Farber said. I feel little comfort that a few warnings and some counseling seem to be the only response. I wonder if these servicemen, well, okay, he says, well, if they've been members of ISIS. the outcome might have been different. While the military maintains incidents of forces members associated with right-wing extremism or white supremacy are isolated, concerns about their presence have been heightened in recent years thanks to the military intelligence report and several high-profile incidents. Now, why shouldn't members of the armed forces affiliate with right-wing extremists, whatever that is, or white supremacy? Don't forget, these are editorial words. I am not aware of any group in Canada that self-identifies as, we're white supremacists. This is a judgment term, and it's a term of abuse. Among the high-profile incidents, several sailors associated with the far-right Proud Boys disrupted a Mi'kmaq ceremony in Halifax in 2017. Now, that's not exactly what happened. Mi'kmaq Indians had gathered around a statue of Lord Cornwallis, who's the founder of Halifax, and whom the Indians hate. And they'd been calling for it to be torn, removed. This was on Dominion Day, 2017. Five members of a group called the Proud Boys, who were in the Navy, showed up. They were not in uniform. They showed up in T-shirts with a red N sign, the flag of the traditional Canada, and singing, I believe they were singing, the Maple Leaf Forever. Anyway, they're singing one of our national songs. Oh my God. Oh my. The black shirts are back in town. That's all that happened. Well, the local Indians, I guess somebody recognized one of these sailors as being in the armed forces, and a great furor was on. Oh, how terrible. Oh, that's white supremacy. Oh, they weren't respecting the native people. Hey, they had every right to go to a public statue to sing the Maple Leaf Forever and to fly the flag of the traditional Canada. They didn't engage in fisticuffs. They didn't disrupt the ceremony. If there was any offense given, it was taken on the part of the natives or whoever's quarterbacking them. This is the great public exhibit one that was hauled out as evidence of just terrible. Something must be done about right wing extremism, and I come back to my point: why? These five young men had every right, in my opinion, to express their opinions on their own time, on their own turn. But they were members of the armed forces, so what? But, see, we live in a cancel culture. And you know what cancel means? If you open your mouth, they want to cancel you. Maybe cancel your venue if they can, if that's not practical. Cancel you out of your job. Have them thrown out of their job, and for a while, it looked as though that might actually happen. I think of the five, if memory serves, they were all given quite a stern talking to. I think they were put on probation, or several of them were, and one, I believe, left the armed forces. Now, that's all that is for having an opinion. Now, I can perhaps accept that you might have to keep your opinions to yourself on the job. Now, if they'd shown up in uniform, that might be different. But I don't see why a member of the armed forces who is potentially putting his or occasionally her life on the line for this country should not be allowed to express a political opinion or affiliate with others. Now, don't forget all this this huffing and puffing about hate groups and white supremacists is from these critics. I'd like to see legions standing up for these people. I'd like to see legions demanding that our soldiers have rights. Rights to an opinion. Now, they might, while in uniform, perhaps not be entitled to wear the badges or patches or insignia of a political party or movement. Fair enough. But on their own time, not to be allowed to have an opinion. This is the sort of thing you would have had in the Soviet Union's army, and you would have in the People's Liberation Army. This, you know, their title, not my view, but in Red China, where the military is just not a matter of soldiers, but of politicized, indoctrinated soldiers, and you have political officers or political commissars within these forces to indoctrinate and to enforce ideological discipline. Now that's in totalitarian forces. What the heck is that doing in the Canadian Armed Forces? And I think there should be a rebellion. I was down in Niagara recently, and I picked this up, and this is a brochure, and it's put out by, what is it? Lifetime Learning. Okay, sounds like a good slogan. And these are programs available at local schools in the Niagara area, including International and Indigenous Languages for elementary-aged students up to grade 8. Want your child to learn a language other than English or French? Find your child's voice and confidence in a new language. And they include Korean, Chinese, Arabic. Now, I'm of two minds about this. Number one, I have nothing against learning languages. In fact, as a student of linguistics, I mean, how could I? I have nothing against that. In fact, I think, you know, the more you can learn, the better. So, any language you might want to learn, it might be good. But all of this is at taxpayers' expense. I wonder if that's such a bright idea. You know, especially among newcomers. Newcomers are quite often not very good in English or French. Now, that may not be their fault. And you may say, well, whose fault is it? Well, I'll tell you whose fault it is. It's the fault of our rotten screening system. I don't think a person should be allowed to come to Canada in this day and age. if that person cannot speak English or French. Now, I know some people say, yeah, but my grandfather came here and he didn't speak a word of, you know, whatever, and, you know, he made his way. Well, that was then. And those were the days when maybe we needed a lot of immigrants. Today, with relatively high unemployment, we don't need immigrants. In fact, we really shouldn't be taking any immigration at all. But if we are going to take in immigration, then why should we have to, in a sense, have people come here who will then have to be put through the equivalent of taxpayer-funded finishing school? Why? Well, because they can't speak English at all, or can't speak it very well, or perhaps can't speak French, as the case might be. We're not selecting people carefully. And that's why I don't think we should be funding this sort of thing. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the plain side of me here on Light Resistance Radio. And I take my musical break right now. I'm going to play a little bit of Hank Williams Jr. Hank, of course, was the son of the very famous Hank Williams Sr. And he first was in his father's shadow. Hank Williams Jr. died when Hank Williams Sr. died when Hank Williams Jr. was very, very young. But initially, Hank Williams got into music and was strongly urged to follow in his father's footsteps and sing his father's songs, and he did. Really, as a young guy, but as he grew up, he began to make his own mark and developed his own brand of hard-beating country rock. Anyway, this is Hank Williams Jr.
No. Thank you. Williams Jr., all my rowdy friends. This is Paul Frohm. I'm your friend. You're on the fighting side of it. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Show's repeated today in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, all those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf.
Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The fiddle shamrock rose entwined, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.